I'm Dr. Chris Thomas, and I am on Gospel Tangents with Rick Bennett.
Best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. What do evangelicals think of Book of Mormon theology? Is it compatible with their beliefs? We'll find out more from New Testament scholar Dr. Christopher Thomas. He teaches the Pentecostal Theological Seminary in Cleveland, Tennessee, and has written this amazing book, A Pentecostal Reads the Book of Mormon. So you won't want to miss this episode. Check it out.
No, I do have a friend that has had me in to lecture some at BYU on Book of Mormon. They've started back these classes for Book of Mormon classes for non-LDS students. And in one of those classes, he said to the students, I had never known that about the Book of Mormon until I read this book. And I think it comes from perhaps having literary or narrative preoccupations. You know, you're kind of scanning for that sort of thing rather than having other things be what you're most interested in. You know, not to go too deep in the woods, but or the weeds, but you know, there's been a big debate among scholars as to where is meaning located. You know, is it behind the text? So if we just know the history, we understand the text. Is it in front of the text? We bring things that help us or don't help us in reading. Or is it on the text? You know, is it in the world of the text? And that's where I'm drawn to. So I'm not paying attention to possible behind the text things or even what my role as a reader does, though I'm, you know, obviously, as a Pentecostal, I saw things in the Book of Mormon that apparently a lot of people for whom it's scripture don't see.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why I think your perspective is so valuable, because I think you bring some amazing contributions to Book of Mormon studies for sure.
Well, I appreciate that. I have many blind spots as well. Before I get too high and exalted here.
Well, I think it's so great. You know, you're out here right now with the Maxwell Institute, speaking to BYU faculty and students. And I know next week you're going to Utah State doing the same sort of a thing. And I think especially BYU and Utah State recognize the amazing contributions to somebody who hasn't been indoctrinated in the kind of the standard narratives to look at it with fresh eyes. I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Well, I appreciate that. I am a bit of a unicorn, you know. I mean, there aren't too many outsiders that give sustained attention to the Book of Mormon. There are some.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, I think it's also tied to sort of the transition in scholarship. A lot of LDS scholars and others, but a lot of LDS scholars are, you know, been trained at major universities, and they have been trained in contexts where you engage people that are different from you. And, you know, I've had a real nice reception. I mean, the Maxwell Institute folk have just treated me really, really well. Probably, I think my first trip was maybe 2013.
Okay.
And I think Spencer told me the other day that I have the record for return engagements at the Maxwell Institute. But they've been really helpful. And being where I'm located, there aren't too many people to talk about Book of Mormon scholarship. So one of the things, I mean, if you took a look at my diary, I mean, it's just full of lunches and dinners. I mean, you could probably tell that by looking at me, but conversations with folk that, I mean, there's a real kind of high concentration of people who have done a lot of significant work on the Book of Mormon in Utah.
Right.
And then USU, I mean, I really love USU as well. It's got this history in Mormon studies, and I'm very close to Patrick. And but really liked USU before Patrick came on the scene. Well, Phil was there.
Yeah, Phil Barlow.
Yeah, no, Phil's been really good to me as well. So you know, I get a lot out of these opportunities. and having access to the library, you know, is almost immediate then, mm-hmm. right? In fact, I'd run across a French Bachelor of Theology thesis written in 1854.
Holy cow.
In Strasbourg.
Wow.
That was here. Well, it's a photocopy of it that I haven't found anywhere else. And I've kind of paid attention to the early non-Mormon responses to the Book of Mormon and to Mormonism. And, I mean, that, you know, that's fast, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's really early and on the continent. So, I mean, you know, I couldn't find that anywhere else.
That was at BYU you found?
Yeah, in the archives, you know, okay. Where I had to leave everything behind.
Right.
Change into a garment. And no, I mean, you know, it was kind of like, well, you can't have this. You can have a pencil.
Right.
And you can have a piece of paper. So, okay. Thanks very much. I'll do that. And there was a guard in the room.
Is that because of Mark Hoffman?
You may be right.
I think it is. I know he stole stuff from both BYU and Utah State.
Yeah.
So
apparently the honor system didn't work in some, some cases.
Not in his case, that's for dang sure. So that's great. Well, can you tell us a little bit more about this French thesis? What was in there?
Just starting to look at it. It talks about. It does have a section on Book of Mormon, and it does have a section where, you know, the Spalding theory was one of the really popular early, that was E.D. Howells,
right.
Mormonism Unveiled in English. And it looks like it pays a fair amount of attention to that as well. But I haven't had a chance to look at it in detail. I got the scanned copy to be able to take with me and look at that a bit later.
Oh, interesting. I look forward to that. Well, so you started to talk a little bit about theology before I interrupted there. Why don't you tell us more about the Book of Mormon theology?
Well, you know, I was just interested in what's the theology of the book, because the obstacles to that, especially in the LDS tradition, is whatever's in the Book of Mormon is provisional, right? Because continuing revelation, you know, you're going to move off of that point as you gain greater prophetic clarity or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So one example would be pretty quickly after the book appears, I believe Joseph gives a revelation that redefines hell, right? In ways that don't quite fit the Book of Mormon.
You're talking about in the Doctrine and Covenants?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And which I know very little about, so that's okay. Why I'm being so ginger and timid here. But what you do tend to get are people reading back in later LDS theology into the Book of Mormon.
Okay.
Right. But I wasn't interested in that. I was interested in what's actually in the book. And so there are certain categories that you would expect. God, what does the book say about God, about Jesus, about the Spirit? There's a lot about tongues in the Book of Mormon, which I saw, and I'm sure other people saw. They just didn't say anything about it, right? And then there are some categories that are a bit, you wouldn't expect in a normal kind of book of theology on the Bible, necessarily. I have a chapter on angels, right? I have a chapter on the theology of the plates. I have a chapter on ecclesiologies, studies of the church. You know, you tend to have these two dominant churches, but there are even additional ones that come up in a careful reading of the book.
You're talking about the Church of God and the Church of the Devil or
yep,
other things?
Yeah, and then other even more nuanced kinds of references to church, right? So, you know, and then I do a little section on women or kind of the lack thereof, right? I do a little section on the theme of murmuring, which shows up a lot in the early part. And all of those occurrences except one are negative occurrences. And so when I say I try to let the text set the terms, right? I try to let the text say what's important, not me telling the text what's important. And so, you know, you get some distinctive things like what's often called the fortunate fall, right? When Adam and Eve fall. But what also struck me about that was just how much there was on this, the devastating nature of the fall, right? And so it's not just all fortunate. So there, I don't want to necessarily say there's tension, but there's more, it's a more kind of nuanced discussion of the fall. It's like the nature of God. It looks pretty Trinitarian.
Right.
But it's got a little modalistic fuzziness around the edges, right? A lot like some Pentecostals I know, right? So to me, it was like, well, having a grasp of the theological concepts that insider or outsider could look at and say, that's right. You got it right there, right? And obviously with Jesus, I mean, he's showing up all over the place before the incarnation, right? So that's a biggie. But I got a little bit of help in terms of entering into that world. You know, you enter into the world of the Book of Mormon, and it's a little bit like science fiction. You know, you have to suspend your disbelief or you're not going to experience it. Right.
Okay.
If you watch science fiction, if you're always saying, well, that could never happen. Right. Well, you're done. Right. And so what really kind of got in my way in reading the narrative was not, you know, that steel is there and horses are there or whatever, but the fact that Jesus and all this kind of New Testament stuff is so early before he ever turns up, according to the Bible, right? And there's a guy at BYU has become a good friend. He's helped me in different ways as well, named Nick Frederick. Okay. I usually don't call any names because I don't want to get anybody in trouble, guilt by association, you know. And in
Nick, we hope you forgive him.
That's right. We'll edit that out. In Gospel of John studies, there is this phenomenon where if you're talking about eschatology, kind of the study of the end, in New Testament language, you get this age and the age to come, the already and not yet. And in a lot of New Testament documents, it's kind of like already, not yet, right? But in John's gospel, it's kind of already, not yet. Already you are saved, already you have eternal life, already you are judged, where the effects of the end are being brought into the present. What Nick said is that he proposed that the Book of Mormon has a realized messianism, that the messianic understanding is so powerful that it breaks in earlier than one sees it in the Bible. And it was a theological construction. I mean, you know, one could argue whether that's actually true or not, but it's a theological construction that helped me think through all of that in a way that sort of suspended disbelief and then opened my eyes to be able to track how the Book of Mormon's treating Jesus in that way, right? Because in the Old Testament, you get some places where most everybody agrees that seems to be pre-incarnate reference to Jesus. But in the Book of Mormon is everywhere, right? I mean, and then...
Is that a theological problem for you being a Pentecostal, that Jesus, I mean, literally appears with First Nephi, right? Or Second Nephi?
Yeah.
Where,
yeah,
you know, we're 600 years before, and Nephi knows his name, Jesus Christ.
And Nephi knows everything. I mean, he's got... And it's in that middle section in First Nephi, yeah, that all this is happening to him. He's becoming this, you know, spirit-inspired spokesperson.
So is that a theological problem for an evangelical?
Well,
that it's so early?
I don't know that I don't know if that's the best way to say it, but I don't know of any I think most biblical students would see that as problematic based on the relatively sparse nature of those sorts of things in the Old Testament. Mm-hmm. So, and again, it would get to whether you believe that is possible or not.
I mean, I know people like Paul went back and then they would refer to Isaiah and other references and say, well, yeah. Isaiah was speaking yeah. about Christ, but it clearly wasn't so explicit as Nephi is.
Oh, no. And Nephi, you know, he prays to have a vision like his father, and then he has the vision to end all visions, right? I mean, there's nobody else that has a vision. He sees the book of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
He knows what's in it, but he can't tell anybody, right? And of course, there's a difference, Rick, in what I'm able to think through narratively and then what I would think through in terms of did that happen or not.
Right.
Right. So what I'm trying to do is, and what Nick helped me do, was in terms of the narrative, that's how to kind of get my mind around it theologically. And I talk about that a little bit in that section on theology and cite Nick in terms of giving him credit for helping me with that. So that would be a big deal for a lot of folk. We think he may be a bit, but, you know, nobody seemed to recognize him when Jesus came.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes say to people who want to fight about the return of Jesus, nobody got it right the first time. You know, what makes us think we're going to get it right?
Exactly.
Right, yeah. So that was kind of the theology section.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Dr. Christopher Thomas. In our next conversation, Chris will talk about the embarrassment shared by Mormons and Pentecostals about the Book of Mormon.
I'd given a talk to the religious education faculty yesterday, and I got a couple of questions on speaking in tongues, and they said, well, what would you say to LDS folk about, you know, speaking in tongues? And I said, read the freaking Book of Mormon. That's what I would say. Right? I said, I know you're embarrassed that Pentecostals speak in tongues, and we're embarrassed that it's in the Book of Mormon. So there we are.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe for just $5 a month at patreon.com/gospeltangents, and you can hear the entire interview before everybody else. If you'd like to watch the entire video for just $8 a month, you can either subscribe on YouTube, Patreon, or my website, gospeltangents.com. Just click the yellow subscribe button, and I'll add you to our Gospel Tangents Insiders group so that you can see entire videos. For those interested in a PDF transcript, you can subscribe at either Patreon or on my website. For just $10 a month, I'll send you a PDF as soon as it's complete. If you'd like a copy of the paperback as well as a PDF, just sign up for $20 a month at either Patreon or my website, gospeltangents.com. Of course, you can buy individual transcripts at amazon.com and just do a search for Gospel Tangents Interview, and you can see all the things that we have there. Don't forget to support Gospel Tangents with an awesome t-shirt like one of these. You can subscribe at Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. Get our latest updates at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Also, you can get our Twitter updates at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got more of our great videos. Thanks again.